One of the first wild places that I ever explored was my own backyard. It had a big weedy lawn with a rainbird sprinkler that sent this oscillating jet of water back and forth across the yard. And I spent hours of that sprinkler manipulating that flow of water by twisting that round metal handle back and forth and studying the effects of high-pressure jets of water on sticks and bugs and sisters. And there was a mulberry tree at least 20 feet high with big, thick branches and twigs and big green leaves, the best climbing tree on our block. We had the best backyard, but even cooler was the back. It was separated from our backyard by a lightweight wire fence with this gate with a push-up latch. And when you walked inside, the whole southern half of the back was dominated by an apricot tree and a big plum tree and a pomegranate bush and a Japanese umbrella tree and lots of lush, poisonous oleander. And in the summer, in their shade, the air was cool and sweet and busy with bugs and birds eating the fruit. But when you walked out of the shade, the back became a desert. Because this 6-foot-tall brick wall, the color of Pepto-Bismol, enclosed the back. And it reflected and condensed the heat. And the only thing that grew in that half of the yard was a spiky yucca tree right against the east wall, which our 3-legged desert tortoise lived beneath. And we kept our trash cans in the back desert. And we had a clothesline, a wood pile, a cemetery for fish, hamsters, and those little turtles you can't buy anymore because they're illegal to sell. And we had an incinerator. I remember it looming over me like a big gray concrete altar. It had this iron door that swung open like you see on the bottom of chimneys down near the driveway. And when you opened it up, it was a cement box, and it always had ashes in it. And I remember bugging my dad to burn something in it, but he never would, at least not when I was around. So one day, when I was a little bit taller than the incinerator, I decided to make my own fire. And I knew how because I'd watched my dad make fires in the fireplace. I had wood, and I had matches, and I had lots and lots of newspapers. Now, I don't really remember the fire, but I remember the aftermath. And after the aftermath, that incinerator disappeared. But I didn't mind because from then on, whenever we had fires in the fireplace, my dad let me start them. And I loved watching the flames. I learned how to arrange the wood so I can just touch a match to a little bit of paper and watch them spread. Slowly, almost cautiously at first, they'd creep from the paper onto my carefully arranged twigs, and then they'd climb onto the branches and the sticks, and I'd be able to feel the heat on my face, and then those flames would wrap around those logs and that lumber and consume them. And no matter how much wood I had, the fire always wanted more. But fireplaces and backyards can't contain a kid for long. So my folks let me join the Boy Scouts, and it was a perfect fit. Because in order to lose that lowly rank of tenderfoot, one of the requirements was to build and maintain a fire and make a meal without using any utensils and only 2 matches. So I cooked a steak and I baked a potato in the ashes of my fire just like it showed in the Boy Scout manual, and I only used 1 match. And I ate it with my fingers and my Boy Scout knife, and it tasted so good that I knew that as long as I had steak and as long as I had potatoes and matches, I could survive. And nobody does campfires like the Boy Scouts, because they're fueled by the manic energy of 20 or 30 boys that are amped and exhausted after a day of scouting in the outdoors. And after a day of scouting in the outdoors, the adults, always dads, were pretty laid back, and they let us do pretty much what we wanted at the fire. So we had skits, and we told stories, and we sang songs, and it got dark, and we used that dark in our stories, jumping in and out of existence by jumping in and out of the firelight, and sometimes we had initiations. Initiations whose terrible trials and tribulations I will not reveal, because 45 years ago, I took a solemn vow by the light of our campfire. But it felt good, and I felt safe and powerful sitting around that fire with my Boy Scout troop. And when I started backpacking with my, and climbing with my friends, our fires got smaller. And sometimes, as we got more serious, we didn't have fires at all. We used our trusty Svea 123 white gas stoves because they were quick and they were light and they were easy. And we could use them above the timberline and we could use them in the snow. But whenever we camped in the snow, I always tried to build a fire. Because by firelight, falling snow and falling stars look the same. Excuse me. Okay, falling stars and falling snow look the same. But fires aren't the same when you're hitchhiking or backpacking alone. Instead of making you feel wanted or safe, they make you feel lonely and vulnerable because they're like beacons in the wilderness and they attract the attention of anybody around. So I learned how to blend in with the night. And instead of staring at flames a few feet in front of my face, I watched the sky and I listened to the wind or the water or the silence, and I felt like I was one with the night. And when I had a family of my own, we went camping and we had our own little campfires, and they were intimate and they made me feel like more of a provider than when I brought home a paycheck. But I wanted to my daughters to experience that tribal feeling you can only get when you're sitting around a campfire with a group of people. So 15, maybe even 20 years ago, we went up to Cayucas and checked out the stories around the fire. And my wife is an early bird, so we always got there way before dark. And we are able to watch other people arrive like gypsies with their kids and their dogs and their food and their furniture. And one time, I was able to watch the white egrets arrive. They came flying in from the general direction of Point Estero, flapping their big white wings. And when they made landfall, they passed right over us and they landed in this tree in a parking lot in a motel about 200 yards away. And they looked like Christmas tree ornaments in the fading light. And it got dark and Kirk started telling stories. And I looked at my daughters and I could see the wonder and the awe in their eyes, because there's nothing like listening to a story around the fire.
Okay.